Well, good morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for April 27th, 2014. Koyo Kubota here. So very glad you joined us. Today, as part of our Lay Minister Trailblazer organization, we have our Live Dharma Sunday guest host feature. So for today's broadcast, I'm going to turn over to our guest host, who was inducted as the Bright Dawn Lay Minister in 2011 as part of the Lay Minister 4 group, and he's currently living in Texas. I'd like to welcome Tamaseo.
Thank you, Reverend Koyo. As the Reverend said, this broadcast today is being done from Texas, specifically a city of White Settlement. And I would like to say that this broadcast is being made in downtown White Settlement, but there is no downtown White Settlement. White Settlement's a very, very small town in Texas, and as I'm learning, as I've lived here about a year now, most towns are really, really small, other than Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, some of the bigger names that we've heard. It's made up of quite a few small towns. And just to give you a little history, in the 1800s, the Comanche Indian tribe kind of took over this land over here. And it was quite a problem. And there were some white settlers here at the same time. In fact, the white settlers were afraid to leave their homes. It was so bad because of the Comanche Indians. And I had heard that the white settlers even ran some of the utilities right out of their homes. I don't know what kind of utilities they would have had back in the 1800s, but that was the way that the story goes. And we are right next to the city of Fort Worth, and I'm sure people have heard that name. And I understand Fort Worth actually was a fort, and the fort was built to protect the white settlers, the white people, from the Indian tribes at the time. And so I kind of found that a little bit of interest. And in 2005, I believe it was, that white settlement carries a little bit of a stigma, so the name was attempted to be changed, and it went before the people of White Settlement, and it got turned down really, really bad in a vote. I think the vote was like 2,000 to 200 or something like that, so they wanted to keep the name White Settlement. Many of the people that live here have a lot of pride in the city, and they have been lifelong residents. So this is their city, and they're not going to let it go. There's about 16,500 people in the city, in the population in 2012, and the total square foot is about 5.1 miles. So you can see it's really, really small. And in Fort Worth, which is right next door here, there is a joint naval air station. And interestingly enough, they're having an air show this weekend, so we might be hearing some jets flying overhead maybe in a little while. Maybe it's too early, I'm not sure. But the Air Force base is the same size as the city of White Settlement, just to kind of put everything in perspective. So anyway, that's a little bit about White Settlement and the non-downtown. There's really nothing here. There's a Wendy's restaurant and a Popeyes and a couple little Thai restaurants, and that's it. And physically, we're about two blocks away from White Settlement, from Fort Worth. So we kind of consider ourselves Fort Worth residents. Anyway, this morning, I would like to introduce Paul Toyo to give the Dharma Glimpse. Paul was a member of the Lay Minister 2 group. So he's been in part of Bright Dawn for a while. So with that, I would like to introduce Paul Toyo.
A river is not a thing. I grew up in a middle-sized city in Wisconsin, with four glacially formed and spring-fed lakes within city limits that casually and always interrupted any straight-line flow of traffic on its streets. You knew there were lakes throughout the city because you saw them through the city's many trees, and you passed many city parks in all seasons, viewing the effects of warmth, leaves, or cold, snow and ice, on the lakes. Plus, of course, you had to accommodate their presence by driving around them. A lake is understandable. It has edges. It is a thing. It is pretty stationary, only expanding with rainfall or receding with drought. It has definition. I moved to mid-Texas and discovered man-made lakes, artificially created by damming a river. These lakes were things because they had definite locations and shapes. Though as the river source ebbed or flooded, the lakes obeyed and rose or fell. I was being introduced to the concept of river. Until I lived near that Texas river, I had always thought of rivers as things with location and shape, defined boundaries, understandable. My experience with that river left me feeling sort of uneasy, unfinished, boundaryless. Now I live practically on the banks of the Missouri River. I try every day on my way to work and on my way home to stop at a local rural boat landing just to watch the river, to admire its energy, to absorb as much of what I can only call its presence. Like Siddhartha, I am inexplicably drawn to the river's edge. There is some undefinable quality, some longing, that draws me to its bank every day. It's never the same. I know what Heraclitus said about not only not the same river, but not even the same person. But it feels even more profound than that. This river is alive. It moves where it wishes, when it wishes, as fast or as slowly as it wishes. Now its surface is unruffled except by little unpredictable eddies. In winter, the unconnected ice flows move along and when bumping into each other, make a soft, almost inaudible, shushing sound. Near where I now live, the concept of this river almost forced the abandonment of Lewis and Clark's famous expedition when several canoes almost capsized. In the 1870s, the concept of this river moved its flow 1 mile south, abandoning the town where I now live, changing its way of life forever. In recent memory, the concept of this river scoffed at puny man-made levees and flooded thousands of acres of farm and business and home property without even trying very hard. So, when you float a river, or drive next to a river, or cross a river, please pause to acknowledge it as more than a thing to be dealt with and seek to understand its life, its wisdom, and its power to affect so much beyond its arbitrary and fluid boundaries. Please know its presence and honor it. Be so.
Thank you very much, Paul Toyle. Every time I hear somebody talk about a river or even water, I go back to thinking about Lao Tzu, who was supposedly the original writer of the Tao Te Ching. And I remember Lao Tzu's famous quote was, "Water is the softest thing, yet it can penetrate mountains and earth." This shows clearly the principle of softness overcoming hardness, which Paul Toyle made some references to that too. And I find rivers and lakes very fascinating too. I was born and raised in the city of Detroit. I worked in downtown Detroit for a short while, and I remember there were many times at lunchtime I would walk a few blocks away where the Detroit River ran through the city, and just to sit and watch it, and it was just so fascinating. Later we moved to the other side of the state, and when we were going to move from that city, which was Grand Rapids, Michigan, away, one of my last days there, I remember going to what was called the Thornapple River. where there was a nice little dam watching the waterfall, and I just kind of went and said, got my goodbyes, I wouldn't be seeing this anymore. We are moving to Las Vegas, where there isn't any water at all. And I still remember those, both of those events vividly. And there's just something so peaceful about it. But like Lao Tzu says, it can be very devastating at times. I know there's a lot of flooding going on in some places right now because of the severe winters that they have. So as peaceful it is, it can be dangerous also. But it still is our friend. I was thinking of a few things to talk about this morning, just to kind of wrap up the program a little bit. And I was running into a blank until a week ago Saturday. I was able to pick up the new Shambhala Sun. I had to snicker a little bit because somebody's trying to hit me over the head with a principle. The last two times that I gave a Dharma glimpse, both times it was centered around the principle of kindness and the importance of that. And I went, okay, I'm going to let this die and move on to something else. Well, I picked up the Shambhala Sun, and one of the main articles in there is by an author called George Saunders, who is also a teacher at Syracuse University. And he gave a commencement talk on the principle of kindness. And all I could do is look at this and say, somebody is really trying to send me a message. It's like, I understand this principle, but maybe I'm not putting enough emphasis on this on myself. And I guess I want to take a longer look at this, because this was a very important idea to the Buddha also, and I guess maybe I have to incorporate this a little bit more in my life. In his commencement address to the graduates, Mr. Saunders posted the question, who in your life do you remember most fondly with the most undeniable feelings of warmth? And he answers his own question, those who were kindest to you, I bet. And as I thought about this, yep. You know, you just kind of think and go, why do I like this person? Ah, oh, this person's always so nice and so neat and all that. But the attraction has to be how gentle, how kind, how polite this person is to you. And the more I thought about this, kindness is everywhere. I am a Reiki practitioner. I have been since about the year 2010. And I just happen to remember that there are five principles that Reiki practitioners are taught. And one of the principles is be kind to others today. And there it is. This is a, you know, Reiki is not a religious practice. It's a kind of a massage, a gentle massage. And one of the things is just be nice to other people. Be very, very kind to them. And this is just popping up in my life all over the place. That's why I feel like somebody's somewhere is trying to relate some type of message to me. I am reading currently a book by Sharon Salzberg called The Force of Kindness. And you may ask the question, or people may ask the question, how do I need to be kind to somebody? Do I have to go out of my way? Do I have to do something special? Sharon writes in her book, she has this little story about the Dalai Lama. And if you really look at this and understand it, being kind is really no big deal. She was at a conference that the Dalai Lama headed with a few thousand people in it. And the way that the Dalai Lama was running this conference was he was having people chant every day to begin the festivities. And on the first day, there was an American nun and a Canadian Theravadan monk who were supposed to chant together I don't know what it was, some kind of certain item. And the monk could not make it, so this kind of threw the nun in panic. How in the heck am I going to do this all by myself? But she went ahead to brave it. Now, what had happened next, I think, is the interesting thing, and it's the point where it's saying kindness is no big deal. You really don't have to put that much of an effort in it. If you know Sharon Salzberg, she was brought up in a Theravada tradition. She spent a lot of time overseas, so she knows the language a little bit. So the nun attempted to do this chant in Thai, and I guess she made a total mess of it. Sharon says she plowed through, sometimes reciting just once refrain when it was meant to be done multiple times, sometimes confusing the order. And Sharon said, "I felt so sorry for her." It was all done, and the monk was just totally devastated, totally embarrassed, and I can just hardly imagine how terrible that was. But at the end of the whole afternoon, the Dalai Lama stopped to thank everybody for participating, especially the people that did the chanting. He then went on to especially thank the nun who had chanted all by herself, commenting on how difficult something like this had to be. The Dalai Lama got a big smile on his face and then went on to describe a time when he had gone to Japan and ended up being asked to chant the Heart Sutra. And again, this was all by himself. And I'm sure we all know the Heart Sutra. It's a fundamental Buddhist text. And he complied. But Dalai Lama says, looking back, he says he messed this thing up so bad that he think he made up a whole new sutra, got a big smile on his face, and just started to laugh. And the nun was there to hear the story, and she felt so relieved, so thankful, and so appreciative to what the Dalai Lama had did by taking an embarrassing situation that she was in, making light of it, and she was all enthused, raring to go again. That's what kindness is. Kindness is just a bunch of little things which many of us perhaps think are insignificant. So I guess if you ever get into the situation and don't know what to do, just do something insignificant and you can see how kind that just might end up being, just making the other person feel good. So I think that's all that I would have for today. I would just like to give a greeting just to say may everybody be well, may everybody be happy, may everybody be peaceful, and may everyone be free from suffering. Have a beautiful day. Thank you.